Earlier, I mentioned that we were fortunate to have again in our midst Reverend Fulgence. He has not asked for a biography to be read. I think, has that happened before? Yes. And he doesn't want it again. But he does want something else to be read, and that is the final paragraph of the Edict of Torda, which is the subject of the sermon today. So I'm going to read that paragraph, then I'm going to invite Reverend Fulgence to come to the podium. The final paragraph of the Edict of Torda. His Majesty our Lord, in what manner he, together with his realm, legislated in the matter of religion at the previous diets, in the same matter now, in this diet, reaffirms that in every place the preacher shall preach and explain the gospel, each according to his understanding of it. And if the congregation like it, well. If not, no one shall compel them, for their souls would not be satisfied, but they shall be permitted to keep a preacher whose teaching they approve. Therefore, none of the superintendents or others shall abuse the preachers. No one shall be reviled for his religion by anyone, according to the previous statutes, and it is not permitted that anyone should threaten anyone else by imprisonment or by removal from his post for his teaching. For faith is the gift of God, and this comes from hearing, which hearing is by the word of God.
The Edict of Torda was a laudable attempt to make freedom of religion and thought available for everyone, to make tolerance a way of life, and to expand growth opportunities to all concerned. The Edict of Toleration and the Freedom of Conscience was signed by John Sixmund, the only Unitarian king in history, on January 13, 1568. It was a continuation of the work done by Queen Isabella, his mother, when she was the regent of the then underage king. To celebrate 450 years of its proclamation, the International Council of Unitarians and Universalists, the Unitarian Universalist Partner Church Council, and the UA International Office got together and organized a year-long series of conversations. The conversation was supposed to be around freedom, not just of religion and resistance. I was honored to be asked to be part of a 5-people group from India, United States of America, Transylvania, and Indonesia. I will share some thoughts about that year-long journey, and this will not be a history class. We all know that freedom is important for us to do what we need to do, and to impact the people and the world around us. The reality, though, is that freedom very often needs to be fought for. People in power give it away so that they can rule peacefully and have the cooperation of the subjects, all of them, or at least a significant number of them. That's why these conversations recognize that freedom of religion is not given in some places. It was only fitting that it was treated side by side with the theme of resistance. I visited Transylvania 12 years ago, and one of my surprises was that I could see our faith in Italian universalism as an ancient faith, not a faith which is 10 years old or 100 years old, but almost 500 years old. I was coming from a small group which was only a few years old. And after that admiration came the awareness of the suffering under which the community lived for many years, not the least the communist regime. The history was spectacular. Church buildings changed hands many times over the years, and the history has been smooth. Along with the struggles, I was glad to be introduced to a simple and accessible faith. These people were not sophisticated. They were not spending their time reading books. For them, faith seems to be indeed a gift from God, a gift they were willing to treasure and to suffer for if needed. We visited one village, and the Unitarian minister in that village knew everyone in the village. The village was mostly a Unitarian village. There were a couple of Jehovah's Witnesses and a handful of Roman Catholics. But the majority in the village were Unitarians. I couldn't believe that there was anywhere in the world, including in a small village, where Unitarianism was a dominant religion. The same struggle that they went through to be accepted, or at least to be tolerated, is still a reality in many places. In India, since their founder, Hijom Kisor Singh, moved away from the Christian missionary's view, they have suffered attacks, mistreatment, and prejudice. In UK, a minister colleague told me that a bakery down the street wouldn't accept to make any of their cakes. In Africa, many Unitarians have run away from their families after they decided to join Unitarian communities. Or others have joined Unitarian communities and they still hide the fact for fear of consequences. We know that many other people and religious groups do not enjoy religious freedom around the world. When I look at the Torah proclamation and the problem it was attempting to solve, I am reminded of how difficult it is for us human beings to simply let people be the way they are, not try to make the way we want to be. And for solace, I turn to the African philosophy of Ubuntu. Ubuntu is the essence of being human. And the Southern African philosophy is built on the principle that I am because other people are, or I am because you are. In the words of the Archbishop Desmond Tutu, we literally need other human beings to be human. In the spirit of Ubuntu, joy is shared. Success is shared, failure is shared, and achievement is shared. At the fundamental level, Ubuntu reminds us that we are all connected. When one human being is diminished, we all are diminished. When one of us is tortured, we are all tortured. When one is denied the possibility to fully attain his or her potential, we are all denied our potential. In some ways, intolerance is usually a sign of insecurity. We are so consumed by the need to be right and the strong belief that we cannot be right when other people are right that we feel the need to belittle other people's opinions and even to kill them. Ubuntu teaches us not to feel threatened by who other people are, by the good that other people do, and the perspectives they have. Ubuntu encourages us to develop a sense of security together. We need to fight the rampant and destructive plague of individualism and the false promise of a happy life that comes only if you cross the finish line alone. The Edict of Torda reminds us of the relationship between people of faith and politics, because very often religious freedom will not come when there is no political freedom. So it is important for all of us to be involved in different ways and at different levels as engaged citizens, activists, and constantly find ways to engage the people who have political decision powers. Obviously, we have to use a different model other than being the court preacher like David Ferenc or the imperial physician like Giorgio Biandatra. Resistance is part of the UU DNA. It is a spiritual foundation of the work we do as Unitarian and Unitarian Universalists. It is spiritual because it flows from what is right for us. And this is important because we can keep going even when it doesn't work, even when the outcome is not achieved. It is the right thing to do. There is a mindset to be developed that, in the words of Rabbi Tafon, it's not up to us to finish the task, but we are not free to avoid it. And once we become aware of our critical connections with people of different convictions through Ubuntu and our UU values that we stand for, we realize that, in the words of the French philosopher Emmanuel Levinas, faith is believing that love without reward is valuable. From the proclamation we read, no one should compel them, for their souls would not be satisfied. At the heart of our endeavors, there is a need to have our souls satisfied. We need an expansive space to allow growth, a space where we can accept to be challenged in love, dissent is acceptable. In the words of a colleague, Reverend Rod Deb, this historic edict acknowledges the heartfelt demands of religious integrity, the persistent sense of conscience that remains dissatisfied despite the threats of social and state coercion. The historic edict of Torda is at the heart of the liberal religious community tradition of free pulpit and free pew. It paved the way to a tacit agreement that one will not be forced to defend what he or she doesn't believe. And this is liberating, because people do not have to pretend when their ideas evolve, or simply when their understanding shift. In some places and situations, people in the groups are forced to believe things that do not align with their conscience. Well, as an example, I read in a newspaper a long time ago that 2/3 of Irish Catholics in a survey believe that what happens at Mass is symbolic, that the bread and wine only represent the body and the blood of Christ, which means they have either forgotten or chosen to reject everything they solemnly ingested at First Communion. They still go to church every day. There is a difference between what people can say during anonymous surveys and what they can proclaim to believe in publicly. It is also a matter of democracy. It boasts a dialogue among people who may have the same opinions on people who have different opinions. And that capacity to engage and be curious about what other people think, why they think that way, and the implications of their beliefs and their actions. understood as a dialogue, the relationship between leaders, whether political or religious, dramatically shift and leave space in which people agree to disagree, and in the words wrongly attributed to David Ferenc, to believe that we do not have to think alike to love alike. In that space, many perspectives can flourish without a threat to anyone. We know that can also happen in politics, when people have or are perceived to hold allegiance to certain political parties or issues. Many people will be afraid to voice their views for fear of isolation, and their souls will not be satisfied. The Edict of Torda was a step forward in the counter-reformation struggle between different factions. We can celebrate and should celebrate those efforts, those achievements, and be inspired to build the next steps. We will, however, be wise to not romanticize this proclamation. He talked about the relation between Catholics, Lutherans, Calvinists, and Unitarians. What about Jews? What about other Eastern Christian Orthodox? It speaks about preachers and congregations extensively, but not explicit about individual beliefs. I come from a minority group, and whenever I analyze a situation, I tend to raise simple questions about voices not heard. Who is missing? Which data are we using? Whose lives are we giving value? Whose stories are we telling, and whose stories are we leaving out? We all know who gets to write history, and we are wise to read between the lines. In a philosophy class, there was a heated debate around Hegel's master-slave dialectic, and people didn't seem to agree on one position. The first person said that even if Hegel was for slavery, he would have been a man of his time. The second answered that he sure would have been a man of his time, not the slave's time. Whose time are we dealing with? Asking these questions will help us check our subtle biases. And this will give us clues to what we see but are afraid or uncomfortable to question. This awareness will point us towards situations we don't see because we are blinded or distracted by other realities. The Edict of Torda is a call to resistance. Obviously, we need to resist against subtle and not subtle violations of religious freedom and other freedoms. It is also a call to resist our own urge to control other people and to control the world. Resistance to the fear of other and our inability to hold ambivalence. Does everyone have to be wrong so I can be right and satisfied? The Edict of Torda is also an opportunity for us Unitarian Universalists to look at our roots that span far in history, from Poland, Netherlands to Transylvania and other parts of the world. We are people of different voices and many languages, but we with one goal, to build communities in which people are not punished for what they say and in which respectful disagreements are the path to individual growth and healthy communities. Maybe 450 years old, but the spirit of the Edict of Torda lives on and invites us today to the journey of tolerance, love, and justice for all. The Edict of Torda attempts to affirm that our communities are space for everyone, in their religious diversity or otherwise. It calls us to resist voices that prevent us and others to reach our full potential. It is also an invitation to a graceful hope that the awareness of the cracks in our understanding may bring in light for growth and reform. May it be so.